What's up, my loves? Speaking of loves, I have my love back to co-host, or I guess not really co-host, but host with
Don't
me.
I own this fucking show with you?
Yes, it's Give Them Lala.
With Randall.
And we are super hyped for a couple of reasons. First off, we have Heather McDonald on the podcast today.
She was a friend of ours. Well, I just want to say who's a friend of ours, but also someone we both look up to. Heather McDonald is one of the greatest comedians out there today. She's unbelievable. She was on Chelsea Handler for 7 years, and then she went on to just create her own powerhouse of a world. And she's a best-selling author. She's a podcaster. She's a live stand-up.
One of the funniest people that I've ever come in contact with. Like, when I'm with her, I just want to listen to her talk because every story is hilarious.
Okay, wait, I want to set you up here.
Set me up.
We have a gigantic announcement. It's as big as it gets. I think it's like front page headline for us. Lala is going to tell you all that we have something huge to announce. Go ahead.
Give Them Lala with Randall is going on motherfucking tour.
I mean, real tour.
Not a pretend tour. A real life. We will see you in person tour.
So I just want to tell everybody, and then Lala will get into the rest, that tickets are going to go on sale. Please write this down because it's the only thing that matters. Tickets are going on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. So that means everybody, if you want to come to the Give Them Lala .. with Randall tour, you have to buy your tickets Friday or over the weekend starting at 10 a.m. Go ahead and tell them details.
We are going to be hitting up Dallas, Austin, Houston, New Orleans, Fort Lauderdale, Clearwater, Orlando, and Georgia. Go to our Instagram pages immediately to check out when we will be in your city or a city near you. This is going to be so lit. Let's like take out the fact that we've been cooped up for over a year. I just think it's going to be entertaining and fun as shit.
How about we've been in COVID for a year and almost a year and a half, and the fact that we get to go live, everybody gets to come out of their house.
That's literally what I just said.
I'm repeating it in a much more
exciting way.
Yeah.
Okay. I like
get to come out of their house, come to the theater, you know, interact, have just an epic time. And I just want to say that this is something that we've wanted to do for a long time. We cannot wait to meet everybody, you especially, because you have a lot of fans. I'm excited to meet my 5 or 6 fans. You are excited to meet your 550 fans, and this is just going to be an epic night.
Well, the show is obviously going to consist of a lot of Randall and Lala banter. I think it's like the perfect, I like to call it a girl's night out, but let's be honest. I know all of you out there who have boyfriends or husbands that sit there and they're like, why do you watch this show? And then you turn around and they're like sitting there watching the entire show with you, meaning Vanderpump Rules. So Lord knows this show is going to be for everybody, even though I know that my girls who know how to, you know, fuck shit up are going to be there, because it's going to be like, we're obviously going to have some great drinks. We're going to have an incredible format for the show.
You're going to have behind-the-scenes stories.
Correct.
Interactive games. We're going to have segments. We're going to have audience participation. We're going to have all types of things. It's a wild night out you've been dreaming about. And I just want to say, tickets again go on sale, because Lala doesn't like to promote this part when I get to the details. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. You can buy your tickets at givethemlive.com. Givethemlive.com. There's also a very limited number of VIP meet and greet packages. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we are not the kind of meet and greet that you like come in and you're like,
and it's like, yeah, hey, a little hug.
How are you? Tell them what we're gonna do.
No, I want to like I want to
drop
talk
it,
to
Lala.
You about it all. Ask me whatever. I want to spill the tea. I want to get to know you. I want to take pictures. I want to post you on my Instagram. I want to throw you a tag. Plus, we will have special guests at each city we go to.
And we're going
to
tell you already, we've already asked. I'm dropping it. We have already asked DJ James Kennedy to be one of our special guest DJs. So we're going to have him with us for a couple of shows, and we're very excited.
That I'm the most excited for. Because
excited?
Love
cider?
I'm just so excited I can't even talk. I am, because it's like nerve-wracking.
No, but having James is like, it's
James
like your family.
James is like the boy. And obviously,
which means we'll have Raquel.
Which means we'll have Raquel.
And I'm going to have to have Raquel's going to have to be up on stage with us and run through some segments. Anyway, we are doing some really fun things. And I think we don't want to give away the show, but we can say this. Lala has made it a Give Them Lala experience. So I can promise you all, because I have been there as she's, you know, we're creating this together. But as she is really putting her Lala-isms into it, I think that none of you will be disappointed. I think it's a girl's night out. I think that I'm invited just by association. I don't think I'd really be invited. but I want to tell you the behind the scenes VIP, I'm sorry, the meet and greet VIP thing that Lala's created, which is going to be really cool because we're going to have like people that are of age and drink. We're going to have shots, cheers backstage, and we're going to do like really fun shit. We're going to make it really, really fun. And I wish I could tell you everything, but I can promise you this, very interactive, very audience involved.
Well, I wanted to feel like I invited people to like chill with me one-on-one. Like that's what I want. I don't want it to feel like I just, you know, sold tickets and it's like, hey, what's up? It's like, no, you get to kick it with me. You get to kick it with me. I get to kick it with you. We're all going to kick it with each other.
That is correct.
Correct.
You're gonna get all Lala on this show.
I'm excited because obviously, without you guys listening to the podcast or you know giving a single shit about me, I don't get to go on tour. So this is a huge deal for Randall and myself, and I just can't wait to meet all of you guys.
Yes. So that's the big news of this week. Again, Friday, one more time, in case you're just dropping in to listen, 10 a.m. GiveThemLive.com. Go to Lala's Instagram. You'll see more details there. But tickets are on sale this Friday. We can't wait to see everybody. I am very, very honored. I hope I have 5 fans in every city. But
people love you, Rand. I think you're going to see that starting, you know, on our first, in our first city, which is Dallas, Texas. Well, House of Blues on November 30th. That's the first.
I have friends in every city, so I'm going to make sure 5 people of my friends get tickets so that when like I come out for my little thing or whatever,
yeah,
you know, they're like cheering, Ran! And then you think I've gotten really like popular, but really it's like my friends that I paid to come.
Oh, damn.
Like I'm going to buy their tickets for them because they won't even probably buy them to see me.
No, they'll buy them to see me. So
that's true. I don't have to worry there. Anyway, we're really excited, guys, and that's like a big deal. And we've worked hard on this, and it was going to happen earlier, and then pandemic kicked in and kicked all of our asses.
So. But I'll take it whenever I can get it.
But by the way, can I tell you something?
Yeah,
I am so excited to be out at this time on tour because to meet people and hang out and just have the most fun we can have. I think it's going to be a great experience for everybody. So this Friday, buy your tickets and we'll see you soon. Now, back to our podcast.
Back to our podcast. So we, like I said, are having Heather McDonald on. And also, even though like she got her start as stand-up comedian, she has the most epic podcast in the entire world. I don't know if you guys follow her.
It's a huge podcast. Like it's somebody huge. We look up to.
And it really is the juiciest of all scoops. Like every time I look at her promoting her next podcast, I can't wait to listen because she fucking puts in the work. She puts in the work to find the juicy scoop.
Correct.
So I have a question for you before we get Heather on here.
Yeah.
How do you like being a Vanderpump Rules cast member?
Okay, I'm not a Vanderpump Rules cast member.
And I love to tease ever you.
Refer to me as that. Not that I have any disrespect. I'm a film director and film producer.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, you just were in Florida for one of the premieres.
I was for the first screening at the Gasparilla Film Festival of Midnight in Switchgrass, our movie with Megan Fox, Machine Gun Kelly, Emil Hirsch. So we had our first screening. A bunch of actors flew in. We had our first screening in a real theater. First time I've been in a real theater in almost a year and a half. It went great. And now we have the world premiere coming up July 19th in LA. So it's very exciting. But
what's that going to be like for you? Because you've been to a million and one premieres.
As a producer.
What's it going to be like? It's like your directorial debut for real.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, even in Tampa at the premiere, I was very emotional because it was my first premiere as a director. And it's a very different thing. I was petrified. I was nervous. You know, I had all the actors around me, so I felt like pretty safe because it was like my friends.
All of your actors have been very supportive of the film. And you know, when I say that, I'm sure everyone's like, well, of course they were supportive of the film. But there are many actors who are not behind the films that they're in. I don't want to say a lot, but there have been actors who don't back up the film.
It happens all the time. I produced over 115, 118 movies, and there's movies where the movie just doesn't work well and talent doesn't always get behind it. But at the same time, there are movies all over the place. I think when you have a cast that really believes in the film, like the cast I have, who really believed in it from the beginning, and then we lived through a pandemic together. Mm-hmm. You know, it took us 9 months to finish a movie, which is not normal for a small independent film. I think really brought us all together. So I'm very, very proud of the relationships I have with everybody.
Tell our listeners how many views the trailer got when it came out.
Well, worldwide impressions is what the studio tells me is like the test, like how many impressions on all platforms. So
okay.
Trailer, this, that, articles, everything.
Okay.
They called me and they had said it got north of 3 billion impressions, which is like, for a small indie movie, is a lot. So it's pretty exciting part of this.
For those of you who don't know the film we're talking about, let's tell them again.
It's Midnight in the Switchgrass. Opens in July. You can go to Midnight in the Switchgrass and see the trailer and check it out. I'm really, really proud of it. I am nervous. I'm because the screening in Florida, that's like my home state. That festival is like a home festival for me.
Yeah, that's close to your heart.
Yeah, and it was a local festival that I wanted to kind of put the film first somewhere where I kind of knew, and it was a festival that was happening at the right time for us, where the film was ready.
Right.
And now the premiere will happen in next month here in Los Angeles, which a lot of my peers and colleagues will come and that will be the real judge, and then we'll open. So yeah, no, I'm very proud. It's very different going to a movie premiere as a director because it's like your baby. You created something, you worked hard, and then you're releasing it to the world for judgment. And whereas as a producer, it's your baby, but the film is always going to be a director's and a director's baby more so, because they're the ones who will get judged on the quality of the film more so than a producer will. So I understand now, you know, what it's like to go to a premiere as a director, which is very different. As a producer, you show up and you're excited and you're celebrating. You know, you don't have the nerves that, let's say, a director has, because he put his heart and soul and his creative self into it, and he's going to be judged for that, you know, as what people think. So it's a little nerve-wracking, but I am excited. I'm very proud. And
I think it's good for you though, Rand, because you have been in film for such a long time and you've always wanted to be in film. At first, it was you wanted to be an actor, then you wanted to be behind the camera.
Well, as a child, I was an actor.
Always wanted to be in film.
In any capacity. Oh, yeah. I love movies. I love movies. I don't care what. Yeah, I loved every part of film.
Right.
Correct.
So then north of 100 films later that you've produced, I feel like you could kind of do it in your sleep. And I don't want to say that the creative juice was no longer there, but because it was such second nature to you, you needed something that could bring you back to the craft of filmmaking. And don't you feel like that?
I think that I was at a crossroad in my life where I felt the artistic side of me was a little stale. You know, I think that I became, I really love producing and I think I'm pretty good at it. But I think that, you know, I feel like for me, I was getting caught up more on the stresses of producing and the struggles of producing and forgetting about the rewards, you know, of like how great it is just to produce a movie, let alone multiple films. So I just felt like I needed to challenge myself, and I felt like I needed to reignite that creative bug in me like I had when I first started producing. And I think directing put a lot of fear in me to try something out of my comfort zone.
Totally.
And I think that's why I needed to do it. And then when I did it, I didn't know how I would feel about it. Like, even though I'll get through the film, but will I like it? Will it be horrible? Will it suck? It's an unknown on all levels. I've worked with some of the greatest filmmakers in the world that I look up to this day. I called a lot of them every day and would be like, you know, I'm freaking the fuck out. Am I doing something wrong? Like, if you're not freaking out, then you're definitely doing something wrong. So I was like, okay, well, that's not that comforting, but okay. So then, but anyway, so, you know, I went through the process, and in the end, I really just rebirthed, you know, my creative fire, and I feel so like alive when I'm directing now, right, and when I'm creating. So I'm excited. But you know what's great about it is that directing is a medium that you're always going to be trying to master. Mm-hmm. And here I am at 50 years old, having done two movies now and getting ready to do my third as a director. And it's like I'm going to be learning for a long time. Like, this is not something that I'm just going to be like, oh, I got it in the bag, you know, let's go on to the next. This is going to be something that it's going to take a lot of work and focus. And I love it. So I like that part of it, but I still love producing. It's just a very, very different, it's two extremes, you know, producing,
right,
a lot of business, a lot of deals, a lot of, you know, financial negotiation, things like that. And then, you know, you're overseeing the whole process. You're not doing one thing as a producer, you're overseeing every part of it. And then as a director, you're solely responsible for the creative process. And that's a big thing in itself. So, yeah, I'm excited.
What an incredible cast to work with on your first movie directing.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. You know, I was lucky that I had relationships like, you know, Emil Hirsch, who was the first actor in At the Table Read.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I was in that table read.
I know you were.
Yeah.
And you got replaced by Megan Fox.
Yeah, I did.
No, you did me a, you didn't get replaced. I'm joking.
I 100% got fucking replaced.
You did not get replaced. You're trying to tell a story. That's not true.
In all honesty, like, but I would replace me with Megan Fox any day.
Okay, but you didn't get replaced because I said to you, will you do me a favor and read this role? Because yes, I know you're a good actor. And I said, would you read this role for me so I could hear the part out loud? And you agreed. And you always said,
you're right, I can't be replaced on something that was never really mine.
No, because you and I talked about it, where we said you knew that I had to cast a certain name level of actor to get the financing.
And that name was not Lala Kent. They were like, she's great, Randy. We really we love her work on Vanderpump Rules, but we're thinking we just want to go another direction.
No, that, okay, all right. No, but that's not the case. But what I am very grateful is, because I do know you're a very good actor, you read the role and you crushed it, and it allowed me to hear that role, you and Emil Hirsch and all these Lucas and all these different actors that came. And what I loved is I was able to hear the script in that read through. And it was in that read through that I wrote a note to myself and said, I'm going to direct this movie. Like, I wasn't sure at that point.
Right. I remember this was still like up in the air.
Am I going to do it? Is it a good script? Am I ready, or am I going to talk myself out of it? And after that read through, listening to you and Emil and all the different actors that came out to support me that day, I knew 20 minutes into the read through, I said, oh, I'm definitely directing this movie. And then I wrote to Emil on the back of the script as he was reading. I wrote to him, will you play this role? Because I think I want to direct this movie.
He was fantastic.
And
I feel like he kills every role he plays. They don't make actors.
He's one of those actors that people, I mean, come on, he was in, you know, he's in everything, and he's just one. There's a handful of actors in our industry that just when they show up, they've got that magical ability that's just so deep and so high level.
And I mean, you got Emil Hirsch fresh off of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I know.
Fuck.
I mean, he was at the Oscars and Brad Pitt's winning Best Actor, and you know, he's working with Quentin Tarantino, and he's like, Quentin Tarantino, Red Lemon.
I know, right?
No, but you know what I like about Emil is we had done Lone Survivor together, and we did a couple other movies as a producer. And I just said to him, look, you know, I'm going to try this. I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to be. And I just, you know, so he's so nice. And we'll get off the subject in a second. But it was so nice that I listened to the behind the scenes of Midnight in Switchgrass, like they do the commentary where the actors get interviewed. And I was shocked because he was just like, Randall's got this energy and he's just really good at directing and he just knows what he wants and he's excited and he's fun to be around and he's just got such a vision. And it was like, wow, like he, you know, I would like to hear that from an actor that I look up to so much and I have such respect for, was very, very kind. So I'm lucky I had somebody that was a friend that I trusted that allowed me to allow him to be great. And he's so good and it's so fun to be a director and watch great actors. Even my next movie that we're cutting now with De Niro and Malkovich and Jack Huston, all these great actors, like actors, you know, of this caliber are so epic. They're just right. so, you know, it makes me think back when I was a kid and I was pursuing acting very young before I went to film school in college. And I think about, you know, I was never like these people. Like it was cool that I was like, okay, I was like, you know, I could do Charlie Brown or whatever. But I mean, these actors, I mean, you know, I think God had a plan for me to be in the film business behind the camera. And watching these actors do what they do, I don't even know how they get there. I don't even know how. I mean, you know, you're an actor. You know, you've done it a lot. I mean, you guys do things, you know, actors do things that are magical on sets. They can take a character, internalize it, and then put it out there, you know, in a way that you're just like, what Things Emil did, and I'm going to move on, I promise. But Things Emil did and Lucas Haas did and Caitlin Carmichael is in the movie.
Insane.
The things they do, you read on the page, and as a director, you make all these notes, and you're like, okay, then we'll do this. And we get to the scene, I want to feel this moment here. And I'm writing all these different things down, and we get on set, and I start kind of shaping it. And then they just bring something to the table that, okay, you set the bar, and then it's above.
Totally.
And you're like, what just fucking happened?
Well, they bring the character to life. You simply look at the dialogue, and you picture... You may picture, you know, how you think they should act, but then you can't think about how someone should act. Like, well, it's totally different when you see a character come to life and it's, you know, someone else's perception of what the character should bring.
And I think for me as a director, I really love directing, you know, great actors, and I pride myself on that, and coming from an acting background. And I feel like I have a connection, like with Emil and Lucas and Caitlin and Megan and all these actors, even MGK. When I was there, I felt like there are moments that it's just flawless.
Totally.
And then there's moments like I want to see a little more of something. And
that's why you're there.
No. And I love that they'll trust me to when I say, hey, try it this way. Something. And sometimes it's wrong. It just doesn't work. And sometimes it's magical. And when you have this magical moment between, you know, in the scene, and you're sitting there, you're just like, wow. And for me, that's the high. The high is watching these incredible performances come to life and shaping them and all that. So
I get exactly what you mean, because there was, and this was years ago, it was like when the Sex and the City movie had just come out, and they came out with a book, which was the script. They put it in book form. Okay. Yeah. And I had just flipped to the page. Have you seen Sex and the City, Rand?
I saw a TV show.
Okay, well, there's...
I mean, like, back in the day.
Okay, well, there's the scene when Big doesn't show up to the wedding, okay? And it's like, just any woman that watched that was just... It was devastating, okay? The line from Charlotte as Big approaches, as Charlotte is hugging Carrie, that after Big decided to, like, not come to the wedding. And Charlotte points at Big and is like, no. And the script just says no. Says no, no. And I'm thinking, oh my God.
It was so much deeper than that.
Oh my God. Like, but when Charlotte screams no at Big, like, you literally, your heart just is on the floor.
Well,
and all the script says is no, with an exclamation point.
And that, I think, is an incredible collaborative moment between an actor and a director where that magic happens. And I think for me, that's, you know, you could look at even my script for Midnight, or you could look at, you know, the De Niro movie I just finished. There's moments in the cut that you'll look, and it was so much deeper and more beautiful and bigger. But the writer sets the platform for us, and then it's the job of the director and the actor to take it to that next place. And it's really a fun process. So for me, I'm like, it's just like a blank canvas, and, you know, you kind of have a setup, and then you have to kind of create from there, and it could go so many different ways. So, so that's why I love the directing process so much creatively. I love producing. It's a very different medium.
You want to know what's great about life? We can do it all.
I agree.
We can do it all, Rand.
Okay. I agree.
Sky's the limit. Where does it end?
It doesn't. I, you know what? The moral of the story is I'm 50 years old. I was 48 when I started Midnight, 49 when I did the Wash Me, the other movie. And I'll tell you something. You're never too old to go after your dreams. That is really, really my mantra. I'm serious. People, if I can pivot in my career and go after something and try something, which even for me, I was petrified. I mean, I'll be honest. and question everything about what I do in this business. If I can change and try something, that means that it's never too late. That's my point, is that it doesn't matter if you're 60 or 50 or 70 or 35 or
right.
or you went to college for, you know, I don't know.
Architecture.
Correct. And then you decided you want to be a pianist.
Right.
But my point is, like, it's okay. And it's okay to wake up and say, you know what, maybe I'm not that fulfilled going down this road right now, and I want to try a different road. And maybe it'll take me back to the original road, or maybe this will be my new road. But whatever it is, I just want people to always know that it's your dreams are your dreams, and mm-hmm. you live one life on this earth that we know about. And on this earth, you want to make sure you leave it all out there. And so that's why I took the chance and the gamble, because, you know, I want my kids to look up to me and say, my dad, you know, never, ever, ever was afraid to try something new, even whether it works or not. So,
yeah, I love it. Well, all on right. that note, I think we should take a short break.
That was a lot about the movie. Let's.
I loved it.
Holy shit. I feel like I'm on a film channel.
You're welcome.
Is this Give Them Lala with Randall, or is this Give Them Lala the cinematic experience?
This is Give Them Lala with Randall. You're welcome. We'll be right back. Did you know today is a great day to warranty? Well, actually, every day is a great day when you're not worrying about your appliances and home systems. And that's what you get with American Home Shield Warranty. I signed up with American Home Shield the moment I decided to buy my house. With an American Home Shield warranty, unexpected breakdowns like a leaky faucet or faulty water heater won't break the bank, because coverage repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. And not by me, my mom, or Easton. We wouldn't know the first thing to do if something stopped working in this house. I just contact American Home Shield when a covered item breaks, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage limits in your agreement. So having that sort of reassurance from American Home Shield is something to celebrate. When it comes to protecting your appliances and home systems, don't worry, be warranty. Visit ahs.com/GTL today to get 20% off any plan. That's ahs.com/GTL for 20% off any plan. For more details, see ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer. The weather is getting warmer. Summer is coming, finally, and you know what that means? It's time to put all of the jackets and all the sweaters in the back of the closet and pull out all of your shorts and tees. And I know you all want some new looks for the warm summer sunshine, and you don't want to break the bank in the process. I get it. We want to ball on a budget. So do what I did and shop Quince. Now, I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking so chic year after year. Quince has premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at $30. You can find silk tops, 14-karat jewelry, and so much more. All Quince items are 50 to 80% less than many similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes all of those savings on to us. I did just get myself a fabulous cashmere tee in cream. It is so soft and yummy. It's probably just as soft as the Quince waffle towels that I got for Palm Springs. We absolutely love those towels. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/lala for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/lala to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/lala. We are back with Heather McDonald.
Yes, Heather McDonald.
Thank you.
Anyway,
in the beautiful home, I got to meet Ocean.
Yes.
And see your backyard.
Did it make you nervous when she started crying?
No.
No?
I'm a mother.
She cries a lot.
Well, you know, every kid is different.
Did your kids cry a lot? Be honest.
My older son would cry every night from about like 6 to 8.
Oh, just 2 hours.
And I would like go like this and watch TV and just shake him like that. But then, you know, they're so easy. You know what? Can I just say this? What I've discovered, because I have two boys that are teenagers. I went on a girls' trip for my birthday, and the boy moms We have it so easy. Mm. No one hears from. We only get like a text, like, "Is there food? Can I go to Chick-fil-A?" I literally have to be like, "Are you okay?" Yes. The girls, the moms who have teenage girls. One of my friends, her daughter has ruined 4 of our girl trips. Not no. ruined, but disrupted.
No. Wait, disrupted. Define disruptive. Define.
Okay, so the first time it was a boyfriend breakup. Another time I was there and it was like a fight with her dad. They're divorced. Another time it was we all got together for one of my friends, her husband died. So we were like at a, like for a weekend, like celebrating his life. And she is on the phone the whole time because the girls got in trouble for drinking on a boat or something. Then another time we're all in DC and she checks her Nest. And she sees that the girl has all these boys coming through.
Okay. I'm about to go take a Xanax right now.
So then I said, do you realize that blank has ruined our 4 of my girl trips? And she lives far away. She lives on the East Coast. So it's like for me to go see her or for her to see me, it's a big effort. And she's like, oh my God, that's right. And so then she said to her when she was coming out to Palm Desert for my birthday, she goes, I've talked to her and it's not a problem. Like she said, she's going to be, nothing's going to happen. I go, I hope to God not. So she was not the disruptor. My other friend's daughter got in a fight with the dad.
Oh my
God. And the dad's
God.
Like, you're too lenient. And she puts her on speakerphone and she's like, Mom, you have to come home. I'm having a panic attack. I'm like, that's the fakest panic attack I ever heard. And then she's like, and then the son was a witness and he's like, Mom, that's being fine. She's just being a freak. And then she's just like, and I go, oh my God, do not, please tell me you're not going to leave. She's like, no, I'm not fucking leaving. So then that at the end, so then we go to this woman's house that I met that I was like, hey, do you happen to be in your $20 million mansion today? And she's like, yeah. So I'm like, who wants to stay for Sunday? Normally always Sunday, Palm Springs.
No, you got
to
go.
Everyone starts to drive you around 1. Oh my God, it's the best to stay till like 7. It is the best. I will never leave again.
Really?
Because the traffic was better at like 7. And then we went to her place, we were in the pool, and then she's like, stay here. And I'm like, I have press to do because I was on The Bachelorette. I have stuff to do tomorrow. And my friend didn't hear that. And she goes, why don't we just stay here? And I go, what are you? You're a lawyer. Like, what are you doing? She's like, I just don't want to go home to my daughter.
No!
She's like, I don't want to go home to that family of mine. I'm like, no. I'm like, the party has to end. And then I was like, oh my God, this would be a funny movie. Like a bunch of women my age that just go, fuck it. They just like leave their life.
Oh,
they
go on like my, the
road. They're just
like no, a road trip.
They just are for never, life. No one's going home. Like just no one's going home.
The not teenagers a road are trip. It. It's a road oh, it's like life
they're
change.
Quitting. It's quitting their family.
They're quitting their family. They're just like, I don't want to go home.
Did you stay Sunday night and leave Monday?
No, we left at like 7 or so. 7 or so that I dropped off my friend who had to fly home, and then I was home like at 10.
How bad was the hangover Monday?
It wasn't so bad because I didn't really drink on Sunday.
How bad?
We were really good. We did that Botox.
Oh, what? Yeah.
That I
yeah.
tell what? Everybody about. I wish they were a sponsor.
What it's is a like, Botox?
Remember I gave you one, but it was like we didn't. It's so clear we thought it was a throwaway.
Yes.
And you put it on your butt. It's just a sticker. And it's like, I it's like, it's
on
like
your
a,
butt?
Like
it's a D,
B12.
It's so young.
You put it on a sticker on your butt.
And you don't get hungover.
Before you have your first drink. So like around 6.
Okay.
It's hard if you're drinking like 24 hours. It's hard because you don't know when you peel it off when you start afresh. But if it's a normal night where it's like you're doing your hair and it's about 6 o'clock, 6 or 7,
yeah.
You put it on then. And what I really like is I like to have, you know, different kinds of alcohol throughout the night.
Oh,
and
God.
And this keeps me from not getting hung.
By the way, I relate to that. I like
you
to
know,
go
like,
from
you like
tequila.
A cocktail. Well, yes, you have cocktail.
Shots of Jägermeister.
Ew, I don't like Jägermeister.
Don't do
but,
me. Have you had one?
Yes. It was
so good.
No, it was it my really freshman year at USC. I don't like licorice. It was the worst experience of my life.
What about Goldschlager?
Yeah, other things. I'm just not a shot person.
I like the shots because I like to get right to
wait,
it.
Wait, so then what do you do?
No, she likes the same
cocktails. I like a cocktail, like a spicy margarita, like a you know, cucumber martini kind of a thing.
Oh.
Then I like to like have a really nice dinner. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm having fish. I'd like, a, you know, a Chardonnay or I'm having a steak. I'd like a really good cab. Now the night's continuing.
Now what happens?
Now I want like an espresso martini.
Oh, you're
so
going
now
at
I'm
it.
Mixing all this, or I want champagne.
Oh,
but with
my.
That, I'm okay the next day. I'm a little weird, but I'm okay. You know how you're just like a little shaky, or I wake up really early, and then like by 3, I'm like, am I hungover? Just really tired because I only slept like 5 hours.
Wow. Oh, I always hated that when
wake
I was
up
like
so early.
Wake up early, exhausted, and I'm like, is this a hangover or is it just because I
when
was?
You wake up, you have energy, then you're exhausted at like 3. That's
oh, yeah.
what it is.
When
okay,
I
want to just tell you,
wake up ready to party again.
Yeah. Babe, you missed the night a few years ago.
Yeah,
I was at Coachella.
This must have been a really fun night because you both talk about it.
It was legendary. So we were at Coachella. I flew you back.
Right.
Because you were going to New York for something.
Watch What Happens Live.
That's Watch What Happens Live. And Heather and I were left behind.
Yeah.
For Neon Carnival.
And I really didn't know you very well. So
no,
I was like,
not at all.
So I was like, you did my podcast, but I did it at your office.
Yeah.
And then you were like,
you
what are you
come.
Doing this weekend? I'm like, I'm actually going to Palm Desert. And you're like, do you want to go to this party Saturday night? I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, she goes, are you Hollywood?
Because you
is it a Hollywood
are you
going to
Hollywood me? You kept asking.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I really have the number. Like, let's text. Let's see. So I have my sister to go with me, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think my husband was there at all. But
no,
he wasn't going to be included anyway. So then, that's the other thing that I've noticed, like, as I've gotten older. Like, in my 40s, early 40s and 30s, it was all about the couples. Couple dinner, what are we doing? Where are the couples going? What's it? Now, every time I'm like, should we do husbands or no? No! Everyone's just like, no. And it's like, and then that's good because there's usually a couple single people and they're like, okay, good. I'm glad you got, then we're like, then it's not weird for so-and-so. And like, whatever.
Right.
So it's the best. So,
no, we're down there. You call, you
so
text
her,
me.
She flakes or not.
No,
flakes.
She had to go to New York.
Right. But still, I'm but, like,
and you
is
said,
this still happening?
Yeah. But you asked her and I said,
no, I said, I, go. This
and,
is where
and
you're
I
meeting.
I said to you, of course you're invited. I told you about it.
Yeah.
And I said, come to La Quinta to the restaurant.
To the dinner.
To
yeah.
the dinner. And yeah. we'll go from there.
And that's what I love so much when there's a plan, an itinerary. But I'm also, I have post-traumatic stress disorder from missing a party. Because back in the day, in our day of when yep. we were, there'd be a party and they'd be like, follow us to the party. And then if you miss them, there was no way to call. There's no way to find
them. Who are you going to call? Beeper?
Find
you got to beep them. Remember the beeper?
The last time that happened, we were in Napa. We went to Napa with my friends who have a plane. And we go to like Frank Valley Winery or okay. something. It's yep. a really nice winery. And I go, I want to go tonight. Because we were just going to like these private wineries because they buy so much wine. So we were just like, go to these places, but they weren't like serving us food, you know? So we were like dying. Like,
right.
you got to bring a picnic basket. So at that point, we go to this thing, and the guy goes, I have this fabulous party. It's a mansion, and they're having a party tonight. And that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to like drink wine in a mansion and look out at the vineyards. So he's like, so we go, what's the address? And he's like, meet me at this place and then you'll follow me up the hill. And my friend Danny goes, what's your cell phone number? He's like, no, just meet me there. So we're in this like old fashioned limo, like fucking like it's prom, like Valley Girl prom. I don't know why we're in this limo. So it's hard to also see like where, what's going on, right?
Right.
So we're like at this gas station waiting for the guy. And then like Danny gets out and it says something to the guy and then the guy goes and then we get in because the limo guy so far, like what? What's the instruction? It's like, follow that guy. We totally did not find them. Could never find the guy. Didn't have a cell phone. I was so heartbroken. I'm like, but I have to act like cool about it because it's like they've treated us this whole weekend. But I was like, I was planning this like mansion party. Like, and now we're just at like some average.
Oh, that's
now
such
everyone's
a
trying to do open table or call. Now we're just at an average restaurant. And I'm like,
depressed.
I'm like, all right. You know? So what I love, so then we have our dinner.
Right. Heather shows up. You show up and I have a dinner of like 20 people.
Yes.
And we're just banging shots.
And of course, I see Britney Spears' ex.
Jason Trawick.
Where I'm like, I've been wanting to get this scoop fucking forever.
Yeah.
I just kept on like moving on over.
Oh, no. You moved like 5 chairs yeah, in until yeah. you had him in your sights. And then you drilled him. You drilled Jason Trawick.
I swear to God, there was a moment after because we go to the other party, but first let me just say before we leave that party. So my sister's with me.
She's great.
My sister's great.
Great.
And And then they're like, okay, we're going to the next place with all these cars.
Okay.
And you know how like, you know how like at, there's like that little hill that kids play around at the La Quinta.
In the lobby, for yeah. Adobe.
And so I see, like, we come out of the bathroom, we're like, fuck, they already are like gone.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm like, shit. I'm like, get up! And like, she's got like the same little skinny cult like legs as me. And she's got like wedges and she's like, oh my God, it's gonna fall down that great hill. And I'm like, get in the car. Like, I will leave you here. So we get in the cars and we have like the police escort.
Three police cars and I'm escort.
Like, how are we just getting like police people today? Like, this is weird. And then when we get there
to the event.
To the event, they won't let your guy carry his gun.
Security.
Yes.
Right. He was carrying, yes, a pistol. And they would not let him. He was a police officer.
Yes.
And they just said no firearms. So he had to leave that.
He had what? To leave
Where
that.
Do you leave? Yeah.
No, firearm. He had to give it to another officer who took it, and then we went in.
Okay. And then we went on the Ferris wheel together, the cop and I. And then I was asking him everything about his life. And like how private security works when you're also a cop, and like what's the deal? And you know, I remember everything about him. He had a girlfriend who had a child. He didn't know if he wanted children of his own. I mean, I just got the whole thing. So then we're at the VIP section where the DJ party is
and the dance floor. And then we're there.
And that's when I tried to get the scoop of what was Jason and Brittany's relationship really like.
And were you successful in getting it?
I got some. And at one point. Sometimes I was just about to get something. Like I was just with Sonia at Josh Flagg's.
Oh my, I'm so jealous.
And she's like, you know, I introduced Ramona to Doug and Ellis, and now she thinks she's a big realtor. And I go, and then she goes, and you know that other stuff. And I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, yeah. They always take your guys and your contacts. Like, tell me about it. And then all of a sudden, she's just like, I can't talk to you. And she just left.
Is that-
yeah, she just like all of a sudden like realized
that you're Heather McDonald.
Yes, but I won't tell it unless I say they can tell her. I'll just go, well, I might have heard. But I was just like, what happened? Basically, he told me that, yeah, that he like was working with her and then they became a couple. And then William Morris made him stop being William Morris agent.
Yeah.
And then he like managed her and then they were in Vegas. And then I was like, and then what happened?
What did he say?
And that's when he realized he was talking to Heather McDonald. And he's like, there's so much to it. It's unbelievable. There's so much to it.
You know,
and I kept going, what is it? And then I Googled till 4 a.m, everything about it, all the Us Weekly articles that were like, she wanted to have another baby. He didn't want kids, which is true. He never had kids. He's so good looking. I think he's good looking. He is still in Vegas. Does he have a girlfriend or anything?
No, he refuses.
That's not true. He dates.
No, but he always prereqs.
No, he has. I think he has a girlfriend or he dates now. I don't know.
He always follows it up with, if you find a dude that you want to date and there's that option of marriage at the end of the road here, then you should go do that because... I know.
Who would ever do that? Why would you even say that?
He really doesn't want to ever get married, which is a travesty because I want him to procreate. He's such a good-looking dude.
But I think that's just an awful idea to say that off the bat.
I love that people, when they sit down, they feel like they can tell you everything, and then they realize, oh, shit. It's Heather fucking McDonald, by the way.
Oh, my God. I had this girl come up to my show in Miami.
Yeah?
And she came up, and she goes... I met you after a show. I hung out with you in Naples. I go, oh my God, is your sister still sleeping with your stepfather? And she goes, how do you remember that? I go, how do you think I fucking forever forget? I go, out of everybody that came up to me and has told me a juicy story, that story has like stuck with me. It was crazy.
Do you remember most of the people that, like, do you have one of those memories where if someone rolls up on you, they're like, I was at a meet and greet when you were in Tampa?
If they tell me something specific, like, and I told you that you know, I'm a military wife or something like, then I can remember. If it was something specific, or even if they go, I wrote you an email about a murder in my town about this, and then I will remember that, like that story. But just someone saying, hi, I met you 2 years ago and we took a photo.
No.
Not necessarily. Sometimes people look familiar though. Like I'm like, oh yeah, wait, yes. Or like, I'll, you know, just like how you recognize certain people that, always comment or are your biggest fan.
Totally.
And then they'll, you know, then, you know, they might come and go, I'm Dolly Doo or whatever. And you're like, oh my God, you know?
Right. No, I totally
know.
What
an awful Instagram handle, Dolly Doo.
Is that real? No. Is that real?
Just made it up. They still stayed married though. The stepfather and her mother. They stayed married even though the sister had been sleeping with the stepfather for a couple years for money.
That's
and they were rich.
That seems like something I would watch on Pornhub, like that storyline.
That's probably what I thought about it. It was weirdly hot. She told me how it happened in the kitchen, how it first started.
Total Pornhub.
I know.
Hour and 20 minutes that you watched the whole thing.
And she's just like, I cannot believe it. And then her friend was with her, like this gay guy was her friend, and he's like, and it was literally 4 years ago that she told me the story.
Oh, she was sauced.
So the wedding still happened. I go, it was your wedding that was around the corner, right? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, you're still married? I mean, she was just like blown away. So yes. But then there's other times where people will say, I did have this other person come up to me.
What'd she say?
She said I was not a delight when she met me in Vegas 10 years ago. And she goes, I was with Peter. She goes, we met your husband there. We were talking to your husband. And then you came up and I go, oh yeah, that was when I did that performance. And, you know, Chris Noth was there. She's like, yeah, that's all you cared about was going out to dinner with Chris Noth ever after. And I'm like, who wouldn't?
I don't know who that is.
He is big in Sex and the City.
Wait, which one?
Her main boyfriend, Big.
Oh, Big.
Big. Oh, yeah. He was at the event.
I thought you meant he was like a big
really
character.
Funny because I kept doing Samantha Jones impressions on stage. And it was like this, like, I think they might have paid these celebrities to be here. And then they paid me to perform and it was for jewelry.
Okay.
And so we're all going to dinner after. And another like thing, just like I was scared. I'm like, if we miss the fucking traveling to the restaurant, I'm never going to know which restaurant it is. So I'm like, so Peter's talking to this couple and he's like, hey, you know, being nice.
Being
and I'm like,
Peter.
Here, like, we got to go. And so that's what they witnessed. But at that time I was on Chelsea Lately, so I wasn't like as connected and like, you know, to my podcast listeners. I was just someone on Chelsea Lately.
You were the best on Chelsea Lately.
I know, but
Lately.
I'm saying like, I didn't have like the fan connection that I have now with like being, you know, with podcasting and people being able to write you and everything.
And now look at you. You're on fucking Give Them Lala with Randall. Like, you've made it.
Yeah. I know.
All right, with that, we need to take a quick break.
Yes.
All right, we'll be back in a second.
So I have two game changers to share with you when it comes to upping your glam game. I am totally obsessed with Impress No Glue Manis and Impress Press-On False Eyelashes because I'm very into just easy right now. And anyone can do it. You are going to love them just as much as I do. Both require zero glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes. There's also no annoying dry time. And the best part? Zero mess. One step and you're done. The lash style options are endless, and there are so many on-trend nails to choose from. Impress, No Glue Manis, and Press-On Falsies are the easiest and fastest way to upgrade your look in just minutes. The Press-On Falsies have a unique under-lash application for a totally seamless look and are made with an exclusive self-stick technology that keeps them secure for up to 24 hours. The Impress Manis have a patented super hold adhesive for up to 7 days secure hold, and that's perfect for all of you busy mamas out there who don't have a lot of time to spend on glam but want to look your best. I completely get it. Impress No Glue Manis and Impress No Glue Press-On Falsies are absolutely a beauty must. You need to try them right now, so get yours today at impressbeauty.com/Lala. And use code LALA at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies. That's impressbeauty.com/LALA and use code LALA at checkout for 25% off.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
We're back with my most favorite human. Can I tell you? I could just listen to you talk all day. It's so funny. You tell the best stories.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When I was walking around in Miami is when I listened to your podcast because I wanted to, but also because someone said that you guys were nice about me. So then I'm usually like, that's the one I would like to listen to.
Oh, Randall and I love you.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
But when someone says, oh, someone talked shitty about you or someone said something nice about you, I try to just only listen to something somebody said nice about you.
Yeah, well, why would you listen to the other thing? That's not productive.
I know, exactly. But it's hard not to.
Well, it was actually, I was with Logan and Leo,
yes,
my husbands.
They're so fun. Yeah.
They hosted last week's podcast with me,
yeah.
And we were talking about The Hustler and The Housewife.
Yes.
You guys?
Still finding out so much information. I'll never stop. And then people said, do you think that'll hurt you, like with Bravo or... you know, doing stuff with Bravo. And I'm like, come on. What am I going to... I'm not on... I mean, I was on Watch What Happens once.
Bravo's not paying your bills?
No. And I'm like... And, you know... But Andy absolutely did not watch it. He was like, oh, once I saw that Danielle and Dana Wilkie were on it, I just... You know, and I'm like, well, if you watched it, you realize that was the first 12 minutes of it to suck people in, and the rest was really about the crimes that he committed, and it was like really interesting, and you know, which is, it got like huge ratings because I just had Kimberly Archie, who will be on my show Tuesday, so this comes out Wednesday, so it's up now, and I had interviewed her like 8 months ago when the divorce was announced.
Wow.
And she used to work for Tom Girardi, kind of like an Aaron Brockovich,
right.
Like she'd work in like getting the research together.
Well, how did that? Because I watched this.
Yeah,
that came to be because Tom was on her best friend's son's case, correct?
I think that she might have been working for him before this happened,
and then she recommended
him facilitate like the
You're
meeting
right.
and get her friend to for him to represent
right.
the son and their family. And and then she was basically saying like they didn't think that the money was going to run out. Like,
of course not.
But you know, I was talking to people that have worked with Erica Jane, like when she started to become Erica Jane,
right?
And they all loved her. She paid so well. She was very, very generous when it's not your own money.
Of
and
course.
And according to her, you know, she could spend whatever she wanted. You know, thanks, baby. And he would just give her money. And, you know, but like...
I loved her line before this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
But I remember she made her first appearance on BH. And she was like, what can I say? Being poor sucks and being rich is a lot better. And I was like, this bitch is the GOAT.
Yes.
What
does GOAT stand for again?
Yeah,
greatest of all time.
Is that what it stands for?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, greatest
People
of all time.
People say the GOAT. I thought it was like a goat. Like goats are cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so outdated.
Like a
I'm so
good goat.
Cool.
You're,
I'm really old.
Your 50 is showing.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Who cares?
But here's the... No, I know. It's all so
Heather,
stupid.
Thank you for that.
I'm trying to be like the cool kids and
Can
that.
I ask a few questions that I think are fans
Hold on.
Like,
hold on. I want to ask one question.
Yeah.
This is the $1 billion question.
Okay.
Do you think Erica Jane knew?
I do now. I
really?
Used to not. I used to think, you know, there's a very good chance that they had an arrangement that she could spend whatever she wanted and he could cheat on her and do whatever he wanted. He
wow.
had girlfriends. We know that now.
Yeah.
We know that.
That
and
came
we knew
out.
That and I knew that 5 years ago. Like, you know, that's why she didn't have to go to travel with him anymore. Remember, she's like, for 10 years I went everywhere with Mr. Girardi, went to Germany, and then now she's with the glam squad. Bring the entire glam squad. I mean, the amount of money
I can't
that was
even
spent.
Imagine.
So I think, but he's been doing stuff like this shady since the Aaron Brockovich days.
This wasn't just, I think most
yeah.
people know about the plane crash victims that
yeah.
were basically robbed of all of their money.
Yeah.
Whether it was $150,000 that was
right.
being won by a victim
yeah.
or millions, he was snatching it.
Well, also, the other part is a lot of people don't know is that a lot of these cases were settled without court. So, like, let's say, Lala, you were, you fell.
Private.
And I'm like, Lala, I am going to do my best. I'm going to try to get you $5 million. And then I actually get you 12, and then I come back and I go, guess what, Lala, I got you 6. And you're like, great, you right. go off your way. But I took an extra 6 plus the 40% off the 6.
Oh my God.
And I'm not saying, you know, they're, I don't know, those cases are harder to figure out. But when you realize how many cases were done just like over the phone, and it's all between friends and judges, and how intense, like, oh. how do you know? And then you're happy with the check you got because you're just like this, you know, little bumpkin that had this horrible thing happen to right. her. So, like, what do you know?
Yeah.
No, that documentary was...
I think
was...
once he started to do that, and then we found, she in all her research that she came on today, she found 2 checks on the same day. One for $9 million and another for $9 million. Now, we don't know the case, but one was for to Girardi and Cleese, which is the law firm.
Right.
And then one just to Tom.
What?
I know.
So no. if there was a winning of $18 million for a client, it's supposed to go in these trust accounts and right. all this. How did he get this company to, like, whatever, write him, oh, you don't do it this way. Okay, it's Tom Girardi.
Well, I think that's why people did it, was because he was Tom Girardi.
Yeah.
He was on the cover of every magazine. He was L.A. Law. Like, people, he had these judges in the back of his pocket.
Yeah.
It was, dude, the documentary is twisted.
But it's funny what you said, because you're like, look, I'm watching like everybody else.
Yeah.
And if I see her, and that was, okay, so I knew this fan who came to see me, too. She was out here. She knew somebody that was putting together the Kathy Hilton viewing party.
Okay.
So, and she's like, I'm going to see if I can get you invited. I'm like, please get me invited. Like, then she was like, oh my God, my friend's so stressed. They're at full capacity. Just, I can't ask. I don't even know this girl that well. I go, that's fine. Just give me the scoop. She said, all these PR people are calling and saying, we want to make sure that if our client goes, they're not in a compromised position to take a photo with Erica.
What?
What?
But then Erica didn't come.
Well, I don't blame her.
But you know how Hollywood is. The minute you step in some shit, and if anything has taught us anything, don't help your friend out of that shit. It's not quicksand. Leave him alone.
You're so good.
All right, I'd like to pivot for a second.
Yes.
While you guys spill tea. So just real quick, because I just like to hear the backstory.
Yes.
Let's start. When you started, because you told me once before, because I asked you many questions, because I'm obsessed. How did you become the comedian and star that you became? I like the early comedy days to Chelsea Handler, et cetera. Just a quick snapshot, because I'm very excited about how you came up, because it is a great story.
A quick snapshot is, I was born and raised here, but my parents were not in the entertainment business. But we always knew kids that were doing it. I had an agent as a kid, but I wasn't that good at it. So when I was about to graduate from high school, I could imitate like everybody in the school. And my music teacher's like, why are you going to USC? You should just be a stand-up.
Wow.
And I was like, how would strangers find me funny? So I go to SC and I have my fun, but I would like, every time I saw someone with a pager, I'd get really jealous because that meant they had an agent. Not that they were drug dealers. And I was like, I really want to be doing this. I know I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I get this horrible job out of school just so I could live on my own and be in Brentwood.
What is like, that job?
Assistant buyer at Robinson's May.
This is amazing.
Oh, wow.
And it was so horrible and I was so bad at it. But in the middle of it, my friend throws down a Learning Annex magazine, how to be a stand-up comic, and she goes, you better fucking do this.
Oh my
so
God.
I take my red Toyota Celica, go to a Radisson in Santa Monica, and I learn, like, you just have to set up the bit so that a stranger knows what you're talking about.
Right.
And it was, like, clicked. And then the woman was like, take this class, and you could have this little show at the end. So I'm like, oh my God, everybody has always been telling me I should do this. So I'm like, I know I'll, like, get plenty of people to come. So as I'm studying for the, now I've done it once, but I'm still at the horrible job and I'm starting to like do it more and like start to like look for acting classes and stuff. And then the person at the place fires me and is like, you know, the HR person goes, hey, how you doing? You want to meet like maybe 5 on Friday? I'm like, well, that doesn't sound good. And then I remember I saw her go down the elevator and I was like, hi. And she's like, like, when you have that no eye contact, you just know. Like, the only other time it happened was when I knew I didn't make cheerleading. I didn't make varsity cheerleading because the head lady's daughter wouldn't look talk to me at a party.
No.
Oh, that's
and
how you
I
knew?
And I knew. She's like, yeah. So then I got fired, and I just started doing stand-up, and I just started doing Groundlings, and then I did real estate with my parents to pay for everything. And they would like go over lines with me and they always were so supportive of what I could do. And then my friends got jobs like at the Groundlings, so I'd sell them houses. so I could like, I was like the realtor of the Brown Lines. Right. Yeah. And so they, but you know, so it was good. So like, instead of being jealous of your friend getting a sitcom, I was like, would you like to buy a house? So it was nice.
Okay, then what happens?
Then,
so still making no money in comedy yet.
No money in comedy. Okay. Like I had to ask, beg people to come to the show. I had paid for 8 people to come to the show from an agency. I don't know if it was Paradigm, it was something like that. And right before I went on, this cute guy that I was friends with, he went on and just like won them, like every, you know, he did well. And then I go on and they're like, come here. And the whole time during my set, they're like signing him.
No.
And I had to pay $64 for them to come, 8 people. So those are the kind of things where I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm so happy people can put their content, make their own money, and not be so dependent. I mean, you had to have an agent. You had to be in SAG. And right. I wasn't in SAG. You needed to be in SAG to get an agent. You need an agent to be in SAG.
Right, it's a catch 22.
So I went to this acting class, and I go, I know there must be a way to get a SAG card.
Yeah.
This guy be someone I can pay. He goes, there is. It's a guy named Wayne. And then Wayne, what? I'd pay Wayne $300. I had no idea. I just mailed $300 to this guy, Wayne. And then he sent me 3 things that made me look like I had like a line on a beer commercial.
Like vouchers.
Vouchers.
Oh, my God.
And then I paid the $11.50 to join.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't even know how many years it would have been. I would have been able to join once I got on Keenan. So then Keenan and I, Williams, had a late night talk show.
And how did you get to that? Because I know you did. You wrote on that.
My manager goes, would you consider writing on a show at this point? And I'm like, well, I thought I would be like a sitcom star, but maybe let me see. I've seen it. Let me watch it more. And it was Memorial Day weekend. I had to write a whole like package of jokes and sketches and everything. And his point of view. And I remember I missed all these really good parties, but I was like, I got to do it. And so I sent it in and I got it. And, you know, and it
was your first real job.
That was my first job. And I got it because he said, I've got, you know, 6 white guys, 6 black guys, 1 black woman. I would like to get 1 white woman's like point of view in here.
Wow.
So that was like just a great experience.
Then how long did you do that
for? I got fired from that though because.
Wait, how long did you do it for before you got fired?
No, like from like
a couple seasons?
From Memorial or Labor. No, from Labor Day. No, it didn't last long. From Labor Day to like March or May.
Oh, that's
something
that's,
like that. Oh, not that long. Okay. And then it got canceled in the summer.
Okay, so why did you get fired?
Because they were supposed to tell you after 13 weeks that they were going to pick you up.
Okay.
And he was very big on letting people go and firing people. But I thought, well, even if I get fired, I get paid for 13 weeks. That's amazing. That'll give me how many credit card debt. Okay. After I got there, I guess they said, enough, Keenan, of firing people. You know, like, stop it. So we can't afford this anymore.
Fire one more.
No, so, but I didn't know if I was going to get the next 13-week pickup, and you're supposed to know at 11 weeks. So 11 weeks came, and on the 12th week, and I still didn't know, I got a call from my manager saying, I have, like, 2 auditions for, you know, comedy pilots for you. And I go, you know, I've never called in sick. I'm going to call in sick and go on these auditions.
No.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
No.
And I went, and I called in sick. And just call like the assistant, writer's assistant. Yeah. And then I was at the comedy store doing stand-up that night, and I had to check my messages or whatever. And I remember I was like calling on my little cell phone, and they're like, yeah, call, you know. Oh, and they always kept you really late, like 10 at night. So I called, and the guy's like, yeah, Keenan says you don't need to come back ever. And I was like, oh my God. I was like so bummed.
Oh my God.
So then that's I like news. Came back and I was like, hi. And I like say goodbye to everybody. And then I found out that this one guy, this comedian, he's not a comedian anymore.
Cause he rats people out.
Yeah. He said, Keenan goes, where's Heather? And someone's like, she's sick. And then he goes, you know, it's pilot season, Keenan.
Oh.
And he knew I wanted to be an actress because I came for the Groundlings and I like wanted to be in sketches
that's
and kinda, stuff.
That sucks.
Yeah, it
that's
does
not
suck.
Nice. That's not nice no. at all.
And so
that's not helping your friends.
I was bummed about that because even had I stayed, the show would have eventually ended.
Right.
Then I would have gotten all that money from all the reruns that ran been, all summer.
And you would have been it. Set.
And then all those people wrote Scream 1 and I would have written on Scream 1.
Oh. So that was a super monster success.
So they wrote on Scream 1 and Scream 2, and then they broke up with the Weinstein brothers, and they were going to do like another movie about like Alien, like doing a parody of all the Alien movies. And he goes, we need somebody maybe he brought me up, but he always noticed that all the alien movies had a single mom in it, like from E.T., whatever. Yeah. So he's like, we need to like get a woman in here to kind of write
that section,
that parts, those parts. So then my friend called me, and my baby was only 2 weeks old, Drake, and he's like, do you want to work on this movie? And I was like, yeah, you know, okay. So then I, you know, would do it. And then all of a sudden one day they call and they're like, yeah, there was all these guys working on it. And they're like, yeah, Keenan fired like four people because they weren't coming up with anything good.
To fire people.
And he was like, Heather has a fucking baby and she's bringing in all these like funny ideas and stuff. So then I got to stay for that.
Oh, wow.
And then
this is good.
And then they see that the people that started to take over the Scream franchise, the next Scream or whatever they called it, or Scary Movie, sorry.
Scary movie,
not Scream. It was Scary Movie parodies. The next Scary Movie thing was going to be all about the alien movies because it was that Signs movie that was so big.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So then they're like, we're not even going to do this because it's too similar to what they're doing. But they had already sold the idea of White Chicks. So they're like, we're going to start writing White Chicks. And I was like, well, don't you think you need one white chick to write on it? And so then I wrote with them on White Chicks. They already had like the story idea, but then I helped
come
up with all the characters. And then they were like, we're going to try to get you in on this. And then I remember they called me and they're like, oh, we have to hire so many Canadian people, but we really want you to play the part that you wrote. Because I wrote it about this annoying girl that worked on Third Street in the store. Like, that's how I came up with it. And then they're like, and I remember literally it was like, can you get on? You know, can you get to LAX in like 3 hours?
What?
Because you have to be there tomorrow, and we just whatever got the okay.
Yeah.
So then I got to go there like once or twice, I think, to do that part.
That's
and
big.
And it was great. And then I worked on a couple other things with them too. They did Dance Flick. I had a small part in that. And then so they've been great.
And then
I was married and I wasn't doing any stand up. But I was like getting parts and I was like, you know, sometimes I'd have health insurance, sometimes I wouldn't.
The worst.
And then
so you're getting jobs.
And
here
then
and, there.
And then I started watching Last Comic Standing and it made me really miss stand up. And I was like, I think I should start doing this, you know, and write about being a mom and stuff like that. And then like the next day, this girl called me and she would always put all these girls shows together, female comic shows. And she goes, I just ran into somebody and I can't believe you quit stand-up. You were like the best one. I'm like, well, I didn't quit it. She's like, well, it's been like 7 years. And I go, all right, just give me a date. Give me a deadline. And she goes, okay, August, whatever. I'm doing the improv. It's Pretty Fun Women. Chelsea, Natasha Leggero, Tig, Sarah Colonna, all these girls would do these shows. And so I just practiced my stuff and I did it. And then like once I was like back into it, then I felt great. And then that after that August come around, I was doing it. I heard that Chelsea was then going to start her show.
Okay.
And my friend was like, I don't know if I want to work on a full-time like writing gig. And I'm like, well, I do. Because if I don't get back in this game by a certain age.
You're going to be out.
Yeah. So I wrote her, emailed her or texted her or something. And I was like, can I, you know, try to write some stuff? And she's like, yeah, you know. So then I met the producer. She only could hire like four people.
Wow.
And so she picked me. And then, yeah. And then I thought, well, this will, I'll get a nanny. I felt so guilty, but I'll get a nanny for the summer. But when I was worried about doing it, I'm like, my boys are only like 1 and 4 or something. And my friend goes, are you fucking kidding me? In 10 years, you're going to come home and neither of those boys are going to even look up from their Xbox or whatever the thing was at the time. And you're going to say, why the fuck didn't I take that job?
Totally.
And I tell that story all the time because they are fine. They don't come running to the door when I come home. They're fine. And it's like, people need to know that like, yes, baby years are precious years. But now that I have this career and I could be around so much more these last 5 years, mm-hmm. the more important years, in my opinion.
Right. The time, like, the time where yeah. they want to spend
no,
the time.
No, I love that you say
yeah,
that because I feel
really
guilty.
Important. It's,
I always feel guilty.
You will feel guilty. You will feel guilty. You will miss stuff. And sometimes when I look at like pictures, I'm like, ah! You know, but yeah. it's like, they're there. They're fine. It's like, it's there.
But they also look up to you. But they also look up to you as a strong woman who's running a big career.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty cool thing as a kid to say, oh, my mom's on TV or my mom writes on shows or all these different things.
Right.
I think that's pretty cool too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's, they have a good perspective of things, you know, and we have like a lot of fun. And
how many years on Chelsea?
We did seven, like seasons? 7.5
wow.
years.
How many episodes total? over
so many, because we only got like 2 weeks off at Christmas.
What?
2 weeks off during the summer and 1 week at Easter.
5 weeks off the whole
year. We only got 5 weeks off a year.
So you're doing, that's or maybe hundreds.
The, yeah, like that's 5, 6 weeks off.
Episodes.
Yeah, it was crazy. We never had any time off, and we always had to, like, you know, but leading up to Christmas, we had to do a New Year's Eve show and a Christmas Eve show and all this other stuff. So it was a lot, but it was really fun. It was super fun, and I'm still friends with so many of the people. And
I loved watching you on that.
By the way,
I so intimidated by you. Because you guys would show people on the show and then kind of like make fun of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, I never want to be made fun of by anybody like that.
No, what I loved about this.
Because you are so funny and such a savage.
That was the other thing. We could never tweet our jokes.
Oh.
They'd be like, the head writer would be like, a news thing would break. And all the writers would have Twitter and want to write something funny. And he'd be like, what the fuck? We're going to talk about this tomorrow.
Don't.
And now you just gave the best joke to yourself. You need to save that
for
Chelsea or for somebody else that might be on the round table. Yeah.
Right. So you couldn't tweet anything. Any of your jokes had to be kept for
the show.
But I kind of, I understood that. I kind of get that. Like, because, you know, we had this great thing of being able to do it like that day. You know, we would do stuff and then, you know, the end of the week, we'd see it on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
But we could do it like that day. So once they said that, I was like, yeah, but, once you're a writer on the show, you really have to commit to being a writer on the show.
Right.
And then it was kind of a bummer because then there were other people that would be featured just as much on the show, but they weren't staff writers.
Okay.
And sure, they weren't making the money every week, but then they would be getting all these opportunities, and then opportunities would come to us, but we couldn't take them
because you were locked into your deal.
Yeah, but I understand that. Like, I didn't feel mean. Yeah. I don't think that's mean. I mean, you can't like let every person go, oh, you have an audition for a three liner. Okay, bye. You can't do that.
Right,
like,
right,
you
right.
can't let people do that. So then it was that part I think was sort of difficult in having the writers be featured so much.
Was that life changing when you did, Chelsea
show?
Lately, yeah.
Oh, definitely. That like started all, because then I was like, I always wanted to write a book, and now I'm like, well, now I can write a book.
Wow.
By the way,
yeah,
your prediction was fucking wrong.
Oh, here we go.
Heather. I said she'd get it second week.
Here we
go.
You
got a national bestseller.
Yeah, she
national
did.
Bestseller. That means you sold a lot.
No, I definitely, my numbers were great, but you can't tell the future.
Everyone loved that, by the way.
I got
so
great
many people
feedback.
Writing that they really, really liked it. And yeah. I knew they would.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I have two last questions because.
Yeah.
First question. Your worst stand-up moment in history that you can recall in your career. Like a moment
that's
that
a
just
good one,
that
man.
Just was mortifying for you for any reason. It could have been, technically it could have been a heckler. It could have been just you sucked or you were hungover. Just a moment you can remember that you don't want to remember.
God, I mean, there
are there none?
Or? No, they're all just, but they're all like not that bad.
Worst heckler, more worst like, anything. Worst venue, worst audience, worst anything. Just something that.
Sometimes what happens is I'd be doing something.
Yeah.
This is why I really don't like performing in LA, and I like to just go to a city where I don't know anybody. But right. Now I know so many people in every city. I still have somebody, like a college friend or something, is like, I'll start doing a bit and talking about like whatever, joking about my husband, like murdering my husband or whatever. And then I'm like, oh my God, my friend is here. And her husband just fucking died. Like what? Like, you know, and then it like gets in my head a little bit. Or like, I remember this one girl had a really, back in the, like those days where I was always doing the improv, she had a really funny herpes joke. And then all of a sudden I would realize, oh my God, she's on the bill. And I have two friends with herpes in the audience. Like, I normally would not invite them to any show because I thought it would hurt their feelings. But then I looked out and saw they were laughing the most. And I was like, I can't worry about that. But like that little bit of like, you know, codependent, like Catholic guilt. Like I never want someone to be like hurt.
I get that.
You ever go to a theater back in the day when you first started? Because I know you sell out everywhere because I always track you like in cities. I'm like, oh, am I in that city? I want to go see the show.
Totally.
Like when you're in Miami, I'm like, oh, fuck, I want to see the show. But when you were just coming up, did you ever go to a room where it was like one person, two people?
Oh, yeah.
No, not that little, but there'd be some that were little. And it was hard because usually like a bringer show, just like it'd be hard where you have to bring people because you still have to, it's you don't want everyone going up there and being like, oh, I could be doing this in my living room, because then it makes the people that actually paid and parked like, feel like a dick.
Right.
So like, I always am like, this is great. Like, oh my God, let's just like get intimate, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. But now I'm just kind of like, who cares? I mean, after COVID, I care a lot less about stuff like that.
We say the same thing. It's like it's after like, COVID, everything, your perspective of appreciation goes up, at least for me, like 10,000.
Well, I would just like stress so much about like little ticket sales and do I have to do a Facebook ad and
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, I am going to still go on and do these shows. HeatherDahl.net. I'm going to the big cities, but I didn't want to jump to like a bigger venue because I was like, I just want them. I wanted to be sold out. I want to not worry about it. Like I don't
totally.
I like this size and I like how it works and like maybe next time. But so yeah, because the whole point is like, I like to go to do the craft. It's not really about the money on the road for me because so few people do what I do, you know, that can go and stand for an hour. And I don't ever want to, because I stopped doing it for those 7 years when I was like having babies but I was never like on the road or anything. And so now that I've established like a headlining thing in the years after Chelsea and stuff, I just don't ever want to let it go so long. It's fine when it's a pandemic. It was kind of great.
Right.
You had like, there'd be times to chill. Like, I'd we be like, did. Oh my God, if they just told me that the club was on fire last night and I'd be kind of, just because I didn't want to like pack. So I'm laying on my bed and I see the suitcase. I'm like, I don't want to pack. But so it was kind of like, you know, of course I didn't like, you know, I felt bad for people, but at the same time, it was kind of a nice break. And so now when I'm starting up again, I have to be like, don't become a bitch. Don't get crazy.
Be excited.
Yeah, because like if I ever complain, Peter's like, well, you said so. I'm like, okay. So now I can't even talk to anybody about it because I agreed to do this.
Okay, right. Last three questions. Yes. Last three questions. Biggest venue you ever performed in? Like the most prestigious or biggest?
It was some arena. And I opened for Chelsea and it was like 10,000.
Wow.
And then for 10,000
people?
Yes. And then for my own shows,
yeah.
I think the most I've done is like maybe in like, maybe like a 600 range.
That's huge.
That's a lot.
That's for comedy. That's done.
Yeah.
Okay. Second question. The person that you were, the biggest star, biggest, most famous person that came to a show that you were shocked came to your show. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, not somebody, not a celebrity that you know now and that you're friends with, but just, you were just shocked. They showed up or somebody told you they were showing up day of and you had no idea. Is there any moment like that?
God, I might have to come back to that one. Because I know that there were a lot, though, during that time because Chelsea was on and stuff. Yeah. And then... But now it's just like
now it's like,
yeah.
Whatever.
I've never really been starstruck by anybody because working on Chelsea, you really saw like everybody,
right?
So people are always like, "Oh, who is it?" I'm like, first of all, everybody's nice,
right?
And I will also say that every guest that came on the show was very nice too. Like they're not going to be assholes. They're a guest on a show.
What do you have coming up that we should know? That's coming like next. Just we know your Juicy Scoop.
Juicy Scoop is every Tuesday, Thursday.
Yep.
It's you know, I've been doing it for 6 years. Love it. Anywhere you listen, obviously. We also do it on YouTube, too. So you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. And that's kind of cool because we've picked up like there's a whole, I don't know, 30,000-40,000 in there. That's not that much because I'm not like a YouTuber, but that actually watch it there.
Wow,
they really like watching it.
Yeah,
that's a big
listening.
Number. That's a
so,
big.
You know, we do it there too, which is a lot of extra effort, but whatever. Oh, that's nothing. Like, why did I start that? Because now it's like, if it's not up, they freak out.
No.
So, but, and then I have a bunch of dates starting in August, San Francisco, and then through the fall.
And where do we see those dates? Where can
they're at HeatherDahl.net. I'm going to all the big cities. So Chicago, New York, Boston, Philly, San Francisco, Seattle, Atlanta, and Nashville.
Damn, you get it, girl.
But I go home in between this.
You'll post this on your Instagram too, right?
The dates. No, I don't like to promote people. Oh, what?
No, the dates.
Oh,
the
I miss this podcast.
Oh, no, we don't need you to
I'm
post
joking.
no, your dates on your tour.
Yes, everything will be.
And your Instagram.
It's all HeatherDahl.net. Yeah. So I don't want to post the dates all the time. But once in a while, you throw it up there. You remind people that it's there.
Heather, your attitude, I have to say, because I know you at least at Coachella partying, but this is the funniest. Your attitude of like, I just don't give a shit and I don't want to work that hard is the funniest shit I've ever seen.
It's
but
a
the
lot
truth,
of extra effort.
You're like, it's so much to pack a bag and get on a plane. But I will say that I know you act that way, but when it comes to your comedy, it's a hard thing. thing to do, and very few people can do what you do.
When I'm on the stage, it's my most favorite thing to do.
It's amazing what you do.
I'm just saying, sometimes the effort and the stress around getting on the stage.
No, I totally get it.
Being on stage is the best part.
Right. It's the getting to it.
Yeah. It's all that other stuff.
I totally get it. It's like going on a vacation where you're like so excited to go to Paris or whatever, and you're like, fuck, I have to pack.
I've never been to Paris, you little bitch.
Okay. You too. I mean, you two should just honestly I could run 2 weeks of episodes just the two of you going back and forth. That's yeah, funny. Lala, by the way, everybody hasn't been to Paris.
I know that.
No, you don't. No, she doesn't know that. Heather, tell her.
Wait, I am going to go on a really fabulous trip, though, this next summer.
I think she should go with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because now my kids are old and I can afford it. It's like the double whammy. I can finally do it right.
But
like I didn't go when I was young, and then I couldn't go when they were little, and now it's like, now I can go.
Now mama's going and doing
now
it right.
I'm gonna go. Yeah.
I see you vacationing a lot, though, on your gram, so don't play me.
I know, but it's all places like here and stuff, which is great.
Well, you don't like to get on a plane, you just said. So yeah.
No, I'll do a big thing.
Oh, you will?
Oh, yeah, Heather, we class. See you.
Don't
I love
we,
first class.
Don't
Every
we
time
all.
I go on there, I go, Heather, you don't need
when
to
you
drink.
Went to Miami.
It's 9 a.m. I love first class
when
drinking.
When you went to Miami.
It's not even good alcohol, either. It's never like a good wine or anything.
Yeah.
And the food, I don't leave a morsel. I eat the entire thing.
So do I. I love plain food.
Yeah.
This was the all best right. podcast ever.
This
Heather,
is
we'll let you go. We'll let you go
Thank
to
you.
your Bel Air hotel dinner.
No, bungalows.
Bungalow in Santa Monica.
Oh, you're going to the bungalow.
No, is it all the way in Santa Monica? Oh, no. That's going to take me a long time.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Okay.
All right. Bel Air.
Heather, bye. Well, we want to thank Heather McDonald. You've been amazing. We love you. And thank you for coming on today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.